Trent Cotney and John Kinney are dedicated to helping the construction industry with legal, business, and safety challenges. Welcome to this week's episode of Law and Mortar.
Hey, it's Trent Cotney. I'd like to welcome everybody to another episode of Law and Mortar. As always, I've got my partner in crime here, John Kinney. John, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's glad to be here today. Finished up another great week with nice weather, at least here in Florida. Sorry for folks that aren't getting the nice weather, but you come see us. That's what you got to do.
Yeah. This makes it worthwhile living down here, man. Great weather right now. So huge news week. We got a lot to talk about. I want to start off with probably the biggest news. And even if you're not in the state of Florida, if you're outside of it, you need to pay attention to this. There was sweeping tort reform bills that just got signed into law by the governor. The actual effective dates are going to be out a little bit further, but three key things happened here. They cut the statute of limitations, which is the time within which you can file suit for negligence, from 4 years to 2. That is a big deal. The second thing is they are going to allow insurance companies to act in bad faith with less consequences. So they've scaled back a lot as far as what that looks like. They have scaled back on the ability of contingency lawyers to obtain some attorney's fees, which could be good or bad, depending on which side you're on. They've also capped some of the medical damages that you can potentially get. So huge impact. I anticipate there's probably going to be some legal challenges and wrangling that comes out of this, but enormous impact. This does affect construction. It affects construction because it's good for contractors in a way because negligence claims are down. However, it for those of you that do storm work or restoration work, it may make things a lot more difficult because you've got a limited amount of time to potentially get claims in. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm going to put out a lot more detailed information on this in the weeks to come, but literally just happened, right before we got on the call here. So, John, what are you hearing from your team? I mean, I'm sure there's probably some concern from the business standpoint.
Yeah, well, it's kind of interesting if you're in the Florida area, because we still got a ways to go yet with the legislative in session. And there seems to be quite a few things stirring up in Tallahassee. So, I agree with you on the legal thing. The way I would look at it from a business sense, I think if you're not doing restoration work or storm work, it's probably a good thing. They lowered the amount of time down for people to get sued. But again, like you say, limits on claims. Again, I don't want to always be preaching the same thing, but that's why I always tell everybody, get your stuff up front right and don't delay on what you got to do, because now it's even more important than ever.
Yeah. And, it's interesting. Just with all the changes, we've had three huge dramatic changes to how you go to market. If you're doing insurance storm restoration work, our contracts have changed almost monthly to keep up with the amount of new laws and regulations and advertising restrictions and whatever else. So it is, for those of you that are listening that are from out of state, Florida is the battleground, right? So whatever you see here, you can anticipate is going to be adopted by other states. The reason why you're seeing such aggressive action here is because no insurer wants to, provide homeowners insurance in the state of Florida because of the losses. Definitely, I think, no matter whether you're in Texas or Colorado or elsewhere, anywhere where there's a lot of storms, you can anticipate that you're going to see similar stuff.
Yeah, this will be a nationwide trend for sure.
Yeah. And the insurance lobbies are incredibly powerful, and it shows that they've even obtained more powerful and a sympathetic government. So when you have the sympathetic government combined with powerful lobbyists, you get laws like this. Next thing I want to turn to, John, is, I've preached in the past. We've had a variety of episodes that we've come out with this year already. I've said it a few times. OSHA continues to be very aggressive under this administration. I'm seeing the same thing with state, run OSHA. Interesting to note that Maine recently adopted a state program. So in California, This was just announced this week. They are going to have the lowest permissible exposure limit to lead in the world. Okay. That clearly affects construction because you got lead in paint, you got lead in a lot of other materials, especially if you're doing, you know, repairs or work on older structures, buildings, homes. So obviously this is still in the rulemaking process, but my concern is that if Cal OSHA is doing it, you know, when is federal OSHA going to pick it up? I think it is overly aggressive. To be the lowest standard in the world, I think says something. So, John, any thoughts on that?
Well, I never really understood the entire focus on lead in construction. I'm being honest about it. I understand asbestos and the other things, but I mean, lead, I don't really know if there's enough cases of construction workers getting any type of lead poisoning to make it need to be any more stringent than what it is. That's just, you know, the way I'm looking at it, and a lot in comparison to other things. And, you know, I think lead has more of an effect on, you know, unfortunately, like children living in the, you know, older homes or older apartments and chipping it off the interior walls. But the other thing, you know, you got to think about is it's kind of like asbestos. There's still lead paint coming in that we don't know about from other countries. And how does that going to affect and even in the newer construction? So I think, yeah, this is going to be a tough one to abide by. That's I guess we don't know what it is yet, but I think it's going to be tough to abide by.
Yeah, I'm there with you. I look, I'm all for safety, and you know, I'm sure there's substances I'm inhaling, you know, just walking outside daily from pollutants and other things that I shouldn't be inhaling. But I gotta tell you, I think this is overkill. I mean, granted, I grew up in a time where it was okay to drink from the hose, so you know,
Yeah.
who knows? But yeah, I do think this is overkill. And I would hate to see it you know, spread across and just make it that much more difficult for contractors to do work. So, switching gears, you know, John, you and I were talking right before we got on. You've had some interesting things come up with your involvement with the Roofing Technology Think Tank, RT3. You know, why don't you share what you experienced there?
Yeah, so at AIRE that we just got back from out in Dallas, on Monday of that week, RT3 coordinated their meeting, you know, their quarterly meeting, which is an outing, and we were actually at SRS. They hosted us, so I want a big thank you to them. It was a beautiful complex there in McKinney. We're really working on software in the industry. We've had a lot of reach out to this organization from contractors about recommending softwares and that's not where we're going because we don't feel one, it's our place, and two, there's so many softwares out there, it's impossible. So we had a meeting with a lot of the software manufacturers who, you know, the developers who belong and roofing contractors, consultants. There was a good mix. So one of the things that we're talking about doing is coming out with a guideline for contractors based upon the different types of software, CRMs and different things. What you should look for and what you want out of it. And the software vendors are on board with this because they're facing the same thing. There's people out there selling stuff saying they are a one-stop shop, they can do everything for your company, and they can't. So we're going to try to come out as a group with a what we'll call best practices, more or less. If you're a roofing contractor and this is your skill set of where you're at, say in you know, your operational status, this is the type you're going to look for, and the software companies are going to work with us on that. So I think that is some good news because I was amazed of how many softwares that are out there now. That seems to be one of the largest growing sectors of our industry is the different softwares. I mean, we have estimating software, CRMs, takeoff softwares, AI, God, you name it, it's there. I mean, Trent, I know you saw it the show. There was probably as much technology software booth as there were anything else. And this is the first year that I can say that.
Yeah, it for those of you that haven't been to IRE, it's hard to describe. It is so large. You know, my feet are still hurting and I've been back for a couple of weeks now. You know, it was surprising the amount of software that was there, and I think the direction that RT3 is going is the right way to do it. You know, providing guidelines and guidance for the industry, I think is right within the four corners of their mission. So that's going to be real interesting to see. And I think that's going to help a lot of contractors, especially those that are just getting started, to try to figure out what it is they need. I mean, I know, you know, that's always my problem with software, is trying to figure out what's important and what's not. So look forward to seeing more on that. Well,
that's
John,
our mission for this year. So,
oh, that'll be good. Yeah. So John, we have got a ton of questions, and I apologize to everybody. We keep getting behind, but I know this is your favorite part of the show.
Absolutely.
So, I'm going to read off one here. Let me find a good one. Hold on one second. I want to get one that's a little more challenging here for you. Okay, here we go. This is from Ellen. Ellen's question is, what is best practices with regard to collections? And she wrote a lot more here, some specific stuff I won't read, but I think the gist of it is there a SOP or a way that you should approach, you know, accounts receivable, especially if it gets too old? You know, how much is too much? How much resources should you allocate to it? And what do you think about that? So I'll let you tackle it first, John.
All right. Yeah, because I'm sure you got some great legal tips on this one, because eventually enough of them go sour, no matter how good you are. So, yeah, with Ellen, you said, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, Ellen, yeah, that's a great question. So, number one is, when you look at your AR mix, your goal should be to stay out of that 90 plus column, or keep it at a huge small percentage of your overall collections. Like, I like to see it well under 5%, 3%. So that's a good check mark to see where you're at, and it should flow. That's number one. That's how you monitor where your cash flow is at. Two is, I'd like to recommend that all contractors that are doing private work, please get your payment terms right when you're submitting in your own contracts. That seems to be a big problem in the industry. You can get your down payments, you can get your progress payments, and never, ever put retainage on yourself that someone else is not requiring, okay? So those are some upfront best practices. The other one is, if you're working on someone else's contract, make sure you understand their application process, their payment, when it has to be received, how many copies, is it a special payment system that you have to submit it on. Now, this works both for general contractors who use these, and a lot of times doing repair work and service work for larger property managers through systems has to be uploaded. Make sure that's right. Make sure you know when you're going to get paid. I'm not getting into the legal part that Trent's going to cover, but get your dates right, because it's impossible to manage your cash flow if, one, you can't get your bills in on time, and two, you're not sure when you're going to get paid. So that's a big thing. And then the last tip I want to get is, do a cash flow projection. Always make sure you look out 2 weeks by what you're expecting to come in based upon what you're planning on spending, so that you know if you've got any kind of deficit. 2 weeks is a good window. Try to work it out to about a month for kind of like a long-term look ahead. I can tell you right now, going out beyond 30 days is such a guesstimate. You're just throwing a stone at the wall. But look at those things. So I'm going to kick it back over to you, Trent, because you can give those collection problem tips.
Yeah, so you hit it. And this is going to be a weird thing for a lawyer to say, but my advice to you, Ellen, would be, you need better SOPs, and you need a better process internally to make sure that you are doing everything you can from a self-help standpoint before you have to get a lawyer involved, right? As soon as you get a lawyer involved, there's always the risk that you're throwing good money after bad. Now, I will tell you that there are a lot of things that we do that are useful. You know, sometimes you get a scary letter, a demand letter. I call it a pay up or die letter. That will get you paid pretty quick for a nominal price. Lien claims, payment bond claims, all that's necessary, and really recommend, you know, you get counsel to kind of review that stuff. Filing suit is always the last thing you want to do. You really want to engage in as much self-help, as much due diligence as you can. Because again, the goal is you never want to make the cure worse than the disease. But yeah, there's a lot of different tools. I like to attack from the flank. I like to look from other ways to apply pressure, whether it's from a licensing standpoint, or it's from, you know, looking at warranties, or it's looking at other things that may be a benefit, permits, whatever. A lot of different ways to look at things, but yeah, get creative and stay on top of it. Don't Don't wait till it gets 90 days out, just like John said. So, John, that brings us to the end of another great episode of Law & Mortar. I want to thank all of our loyal listeners for making us the number one construction law podcast in the world. Stay tuned for next week. As always, I am Trent Cotney. If you need to reach me, you can hit me up, trent.cotney@arlaw.com. John, how can they get you?
And that would be jkenny@cotneyconsulting.com.
Great. Thank you, guys. We'll see you next week.
Take care. See you later.